This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Closer Than They Appear is a new multimedia play that takes a close look at war through the eyes of victims on both sides of the gun. The production uses virtual reality software and video game technology to tell the story of an American soldier and a young Iraqi blogger. As reality, memory, time, and place blur, so does our understanding of right and wrong. The play is a production of the Process Series and Street Sign Center. It is on stage now through October 1st at Swain Hall, Studio 6 at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And Christine Evans is the playwright, and she's with me now. Hello, Christine.
Hi.
Good to have you here. Jared Mazzacci is multimedia designer for this production. Welcome, Jared.
Thank you very much.
Elizabeth Lewis Corley produced the show and plays the role of Hannah, a therapist. Hello, Elizabeth.
A pleasure to be with you.
And Trevor Johnson plays the role of Army Soldier Michael. Welcome, Trevor. Good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Christine, let me talk about your play a little bit. You've written plays about war and aftermath before. Tell us, this one seems different in terms of the elements that you're writing into this play.
Yeah, I think some of the themes are ones that I've been working with for a long time, but this play had an unusual genesis in the sense that Joseph Meagle, who's the director of the play, first asked me to write something for a festival here in Chapel Hill, the Chat Festival, Collaborations with Humanities and Technology. So the brief right from the start was to think of how to make a piece on any subject that was in dialogue with video gaming, and we had a local company, Icarus, who designed for us. So it was a very exciting brief. And for me, the question was, why does it have to have media? You know, why does it have to have video? Because I didn't want to just use it as wallpaper for any story. And so when I was looking around and I discovered that video game technology was in fact driving a lot of military innovation and then on and on in a kind of cycle, I got very interested in that and very interested in the use of video game technology for training and rehabilitation of soldiers. So that's kind of where we started. So the story started in this small poetic way. So I think technology was really part of it right from the beginning.
Tell us how the technology is integrated. Maybe you can tell us more about the story itself.
Yes.
And then the role of technology in it.
Yes. So I think, you know, you asked about the play in relation to other writings about war. I think for me, one of the defining experiences of coming to America was being here at the start of the war in Iraq. And I just, two things happened simultaneously for me. And one is that I entered the American bubble and my own country, Australia, and the sense of the rest of the world kind of vanished. And then this war started. So one of my questions was, what is also happening to the Iraqis in this war? Why are we not hearing those stories too? So I wanted to find a way to talk about both sides. And then when I discovered this technology of Virtual Iraq, which is a video game-based virtual reality program for helping soldiers rehabilitate from traumatic experience, it struck me that it was a landscape that could offer both sides of this story, and that was very interesting to me.
How does that technology work, and tell us what role it plays in your production?
Two of the characters in this play, one is Michael, who is a veteran with PTSD, and the other, there are three characters, but the two that are on other sides of this visual world are Michael, a veteran, and Zainab, who is an Iraqi girl blogging out of Fallujah. And their timelines collide, and the story eventually turns out to be an encounter between these two people. And the landscape that Hannah, the therapist, is using to help Michael recover from his PTSD, which is an animated landscape of Iraq, is also the place that Zainab is actually living in. So it's kind of like, it works like a double mirror, that the same landscape is one of memory for Michael, but of actual lived experience for Zainab, and yet their stories collide.
And they're virtual, and that then has to be staged, Jared. So tell us how the technology works in this production and how you've integrated it.
Yeah, so, you know, we first started out with
with using the paints of virtual Iraq within our piece and trying to figure out, you know, what are the different assets that are used within the software. And then Christine would sit next to me while we were working through the composition, the look of, you know, the stage picture, while simultaneously figuring out the cadence and rhythm of the scene work and starting to find what overlaps together as opposed to write something and then discover it later. And discovering, oh, a Black Hawk flyover moves stage right to stage left, and that's actually really lovely for this character standing center stage, and us needing to lead the eye over to Michael in the therapy room. And so starting to look at compositions that way, as well as, and I think in this latest iteration, it's really hitting home, figuring out how the software can become truly a character in the the play. We've added another character that is in relations to Hannah, the therapist, and her use of technology with a cell phone, and how do we give agency to the cell phone even though we don't see the or hear the other person on the other end. And technology has changed dramatically since we've last produced this. And so just trying to figure out, how it drives the story forward as opposed to just, illustrating what the audience could also be imagining.
Right, right. Well, that's the question for me. And Elizabeth, I'll put it to you. Intellectually, I can see how these themes play out. You know, fabulous themes of consciousness and the way memory acts like a mediated experience and how we're having to treat that in PTSD, right? And now we've got technology. And then there's Zenib's technology of, you know, blogging and being able to reach. How are you going to stage this for an audience? What are we going to see on the stage, sitting in the audience, that brings all of this to life for us?
Well, that's sort of the job of our director, Joseph Meagle, who's orchestrating these elements. But we also have the incredible advantage in this particular iteration of an extraordinary set by Melpomene Katakalos, who has designed these transparencies and solidities that can morph and change, so that sometimes we can have this young Iraqi girl speaking to us from Fallujah, and sometimes she's very, very present and with us, and sometimes she's at a remove, and sometimes she's technologically mediated, and sometimes she's not. But the way that this sort of begins to interact with a virtual reality begins to create a kind of alchemy that we hope helps people to bring together the notion of what these impacts of war are on the bodies of the returning veteran and the incredibly complex and personal lives of the Iraqi civilians. So whether we have successfully done that or not will be determined by our audience. But what we have attempted to do is to create an envelope that will allow those things to encounter one another in a space with a live audience.
Trevor, as the actor who will play the role of the Army soldier, Michael, just from a craft point of view, how is it for you as an actor to have to interact with these kind of virtual and real cues that are going to be your signals for this play?
Well, The play is written in such a way that some of the dialogue is fairly easy to understand and it flows. So I was able to memorize it a little easier than typical. But interacting with the media and having to, well, before the media was there and introduced, we have to act like the media is there or act like a light is there. So that's been a challenge. At the same time, our director has really been pushing us to really tell the story and project the story. And then later, the same thing that I'm attempting to project from the inside, the video will only support it. Video doesn't lead it. It comes from within my character. So I'm having to go deep to give him what he wants and what he expects. And it's been a real challenge. It's brought out the best of me as a performer.
Tell us more about Michael, your character.
Well, Michael is a character that often goes unseen, I think. The play starts off with a line that he says is, "You don't see us." And it's it seems like we have soldiers all over the world who come back from the war, and they disappear. And we often don't see them. We don't experience what they go through. We have no empathy for them. And I think if we began to develop some empathy for these real, very real people, will pay more attention to what they need to be members of society, productive members of society. And I also think it will cause people to hesitate before they say, okay, I think it's okay to go to war. It will cause people to pause before even considering war as an option, because it's not only killing people, it's killing people's spirits, which is sometimes worse than death.
Yeah, and those people come back, and they have to raise families, and they live in our communities. And so those are all powerful things to think about. I wonder if you would do a scene for us and perhaps set it up for us.
Be glad to. Well, this is a scene where Michael has had somewhat of a mild anxiety attack because of a trigger has been set off, and he's going into a therapy session to let the doctor know some of the things that he's going through that he thinks are his real problem.
So, how's things? Been sleeping okay?
Not great.
Exercise, appetite?
No, I've just been resting.
Have you been outside much?
Yeah, they throw you out at 9:30, so I've been outside.
And how's that feel?
Cold. It's winter. It's cold.
There's a cafe here. You can always come
and hang out with all the other cripples.
No one's calling you a cripple. And it's normal to feel angry with PTSD, but it can turn into depression, so it's better to go out, see other people. Do you know why it's hard to sleep? Feeling jumpy, bad memories?
Yeah. No, it's just little things.
Like what?
Like Saturday, we went to Walmart. The guy from the shelter does a store run twice a week, and so I'm walking down the aisle looking for toothpaste, and the store layout's all changed, so that got me right there. So my stress is like up there.
About a 3?
A 4, at least. Then when I find a toothpaste, it's worse because there's, no kidding, there's about 30 different brands of toothpaste, and I can't. It's been a long time since I got to decide that kind of stuff, and I could not make this simple decision. It's not hard, right? But yeah, I got through Fallujah, and I'm sweating my guts out in aisle 17 of Walmart trying to choose toothpaste.
Yeah. You come back, and the pressure's off, but there's still all this steam built up inside.
I felt like such a retard.
At Walmart.
Here, when that buzzer set me off.
It makes sense that you'd feel that way, Michael, but these are normal responses to
an abnormal situation. Yeah, but some girl hits a buzzer, I hit the deck, it's just
crazy. This
course
can really help to separate those triggers from the memories.
You told me that. I get it.
So, back in the Humvee? In the VR, I mean?
No offense, but I'm kind of messed up today. And combat patrols, like, or worse memories. Walmart's bad enough.
Well, Walmart's kind of intense. A lot of people can't deal with Walmart.
Yeah, right.
Michael, this stuff will get easier if we deal with what's causing it, and it's not toothpaste.
You're kind of sarcastic for a doctor, you know?
Yeah, well, for a guy who doesn't want to talk, you can be kind of chatty.
Chatty? Well, that's a new one. Chatty.
Trevor Johnson and Elizabeth Lewis Corley in a scene from the new multimedia play Closer Than They Appear on stage at Swain Hall at UNC Chapel Hill's campus from now through October 1st. I'm also speaking with playwright Christine Evans and multimedia designer Jared Mazzacci. Jared, let's talk a little bit more about this software, the real software, and what it does and why we'd be recommending this for Michael.
Yeah, so Virtual Rack, which is the creator of it, Skip Rizzo, has been a really wonderful collaborator with us over at Institute for Creative Technologies out in USC. USC, yes.
Yeah,
yeah. USC. And basically, it's a software where you put on VR goggles. In some cases, you have a smell mask. You're sitting on a rumble pack. You have a controller, sometimes the weight of the gun. And it's still talk therapy. So you can hear, talk, and listen and respond to the therapist who's in the room on a separate monitor with a bunch of buttons on it. And each of those buttons can trigger different events or environments within the software, such as something as simple as changing the time of day, other times much more intense, like an IED, and you can mess with the proximity to the viewer. And ultimately what this is to do is to allow the patient to be able to walk through the environment and be able to address how they're feeling, their anxieties you heard in the scene, giving on a scale, you know, of how they feel of 1 to 10. On an additional monitor for the therapist, they're getting sweat, heart rate, that sort of thing. And so you can see as the therapist how close they're aware of their own anxieties or how far away they are from their awareness. And so another thing to note is that the software is of a specific graphic design. So it's not what you're thinking of like Call of Duty, which is like really intense, really as close to reality as possible in their graphics. And that's intentional from speaking with Skip, because it allows for the uncanny valley to exist within this so that the therapist and the patient can kind of fill in the blanks. And that allows for the patient to truly use it from in a personalized way.
And Christine, you know? I assume that the theory behind this is that a lot of these memories are repressed, and so all the triggers and the sensory associations are repressed with them. By reliving them and you know, sort of bringing them back to consciousness, you can begin to unpack them and cope. Mm. Is that sort of part of the theory here?
The model that they use is a variant of cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm. So it's not really so much about what we think of in the Freudian terms of repressed memories. It's more about events that create overwhelming panic sensations. Mm. So, you know, you might hear a really loud car backfiring, or you might feel scared having people stand behind you. So the idea is to condition people to be able to handle the trigger and to separate how they feel from the event of the trigger. So, but I was really interested in what Jared was saying about, you know, the non-realistic portrayal in this. You know, one of the things that we've talked a lot about is the water buffalo. And the water buffalo is a very special image to our team because it comes from one of the first iterations of this technology, which was virtual Vietnam. All that time ago, they had the most rudimentary kind of video-based software for helping Vietnam vets get over this stuff. You know, and the graphics were incredibly crude. But Skip, our collaborator, told us a story about how the guys would go back into this very, very basic immersive environment and see these cartoon-like images, and then they'd come out and they'd say things like, oh, that was really amazing. I'd forgotten all about the water buffaloes. There were no water buffaloes at all in the visuals. You know, so one of the things that I think is so exciting and fascinating about this work is that it allows us to find a way into a really expressionist theatre where the images trigger memory.
Yeah.
You know, they don't illustrate memory. They're a portal into it. And that's very exciting
in
the theater.
And it gets to, I think, something that is worth pointing out, that this may seem to be a little bit about technology, but ultimately it's about storytelling and the ways in which we encode and then express the stories that have become our lives.
Exactly.
And that's a little bit of what you had. How much of that was what you thought going into this play, and how much of it sort of occurred to you as you began to put this piece together?
You know, I feel as though I'm back where I started, but in a better way in a lot of ways with this particular iteration of the project, because the very first version of it, which Trevor was actually in all those years ago at the Performance Factory, was kind of poetic and dreamy, and it was about going through portals in the floor into memory. And then we encountered this astounding technology, and I think I definitely, and maybe all of us, were a little bit overwhelmed by the power of this technology and the veracity of the actual people's stories. So I feel as though the play took a bit of a right turn into realism, and now we've reclaimed the poetic, but we've also woven the technology back in. So,
which is what a process series should be all about.
Well done.
The closer... Closer Than They Appear is a new multimedia play. It takes a close look at war through the eyes of those who not only experienced war, but on those on both sides of the gun. My guests are playwright Christine Evans, producer and actor Elizabeth Lewis Corley, actor Trevor Johnson, and multimedia designer Jared Mazzacci. I want to thank all of you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Closer Than They Appear is a production of the Process Series and Street Signs Center. It is on stage now through October 1st at Swain Hall on the UNC Chapel Hill campus. Just ahead, we will speak with award-winning author and activist Edwige Gonzaga. Please stay tuned to The State of Things. Don't go away.